I'm a mix of two races. I have two cultures. My family looks a lot different from families when my mom and dad were kids. The races are mixing. This podcast is all about the cool things and challenges for biracial couples and mixed families just like mine.
I am excited today to have special guest, John Kim. He is also known as the Angry Therapist.
Yes.
He is an author. I first found John with his book, I Used to Be a Miserable Fuck. And then he has since written a single, On Purpose. He is the co-founder of the Journey Intensive, and I am a graduate. I graduated in February. And John, it's great to have you here. Thanks for joining us.
Yeah, thank you for having me. Good morning.
Good morning. So we were just talking, John and I, that we're very much Gen I's, born here to immigrant parents. And one of the things that I really wanted to, and we're both married to white folks, you know, my white guy here. One of the things that we wanted to talk about was there's a lot of discussion that's been happening about the Harry and Meghan, you know, interview. And it's not really the specifics that they talked about. It was really more about the issues that they raised being a mixed race couple that we wanted to chat about. You know, one of the things that was brought up was the color of their son's skin when they were born, right? Yeah. And I think that that's something that both Scott and I, you know, talked about when we had our whole wheat boy, a little brown from me and a little white from Scott. You know, so a lot of these issues that she was bringing up, I was very much nodding my head in agreement. You know, as a woman of color, we've dealt with these kind of issues. And I like to ask you how you've handled, you know, possibly individuals that have talked to you and seen your race before they see or hear who you are.
Yeah. So being an Asian American, one of the things I've realized, oh, by the way, I'm not married. I was married once. Right now. Yeah. And also that might be interesting too, right? Yeah. So, you know, having a child, and you know, having a life partner, but also not being married, especially you know, in our cultures, that may be you know, looked down upon.
Yeah.
But I remember growing up, there was a lot of Caucasian men dating Asian women, and it was it was because of, like, you know, Asian women being sexualized, right? But there were very few Asian men dating Caucasian women, you know, 80s, 90s. And so I grew up in a world where it was predominantly white. It was a lot of surfer skaters, and those were the cool kids. And I was, you know, the Korean kid, kind of trying to fit in. I wish I had grown up more in the 90s, the Fast and Furious days, where they're, you know, the Asian kids are cool. And it just wasn't my story. So I've always tried to fit in. Whoever I was with, and because there weren't a lot of Asian women around me, I just happened to have, Caucasian girlfriends, and we always noticed that there weren't a lot of, Asian dudes dating, white girls. And I think there's more now, but that was very rare, when I was growing up. You know, something we kind of realized, you know, and I think even I remember when I was married, my wife at the time, extremely commercially attractive, and she was in the entertainment business. So I remember we were getting, we had a limo. She had to go do some press for her movie, and we were getting a ride. And the limo driver assumed that I was her agent. And I was like, I'm her agent, not her agent. But like, you know, just people assume that, that we're not together because of color or because, you know, yeah. So stuff like that, you know, subtle stuff like that, that I have experienced.
Yeah. Well,
yeah, we do the restaurant and they come separate checks, same check. I'm thinking that we're not a couple.
Right.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah. And I've had friends of mine be assumed that she's the nanny because she is, you know, brown and her kid is lighter skinned, right? Or white passing. So, yes, absolutely. Those are definitely some of the perceptions of society that is placed on us, and how we kind of have to respond to it. You know, like I think that when I was younger, I was a lot more adamant, like I'm Canadian. I'm a Canadian first and foremost. I'm not in this little box, this stereotype of being South Asian, you know. And I think now, which I'm so thankful of, we're all a lot more proud of our culture and how we bring diversity to the table and stuff. But one of the things is we would not want to raise our son anywhere else, because there's a lot of mixed race couples here in Toronto, and he has a lot of friends that are exactly like him. So it's not necessarily a conversation that needs to take place on a daily basis, whereas I think that if we were elsewhere, it would be, and that would be difficult.
Yeah.
Or Toronto specifically there, John. So yeah.
John, have you provided therapy to mixed race couples? And if so, I mean, what's their biggest concern?
No, not that much. Very few, you know. I mean, I think there's more now today more than ever. I mean, do you guys think that it's better today, or do you guys still feel like it's you know, the same?
I feel it's much better. I mean, like Kobinder said, here in Toronto, it's like every other couple you run into are a mix.
But like John said, we are living in a privileged place right now, you know, because our children do are not, you know, either or. They are who they are. Mm-hmm. But if we're talking about small town, you know, Ontario or small town BC, I think that things may be very different there because of the lack of mixed race couples. You know, you tend to congregate with individuals that you know are facing the same issues, or that you can connect with and be honest with, you know. So so to answer your question, I think that it is changing, but I am still worried about my son, even living here in Toronto, how he's going to be perceived when he is older, you know, and, you know, going to high school and university and working. I remember when I was trying to get a job and stuff like that, or try to get information, I loved using the phone because they couldn't see me and they didn't need to know my name, right? So it was without bias. The information that I would be getting is without bias, whereas Tage does look South Asian sometimes, and sometimes he's white passing. You know?
So, John, for you, you also have a mixed baby. About identity, have you thought ahead about, you know, questions that you may get asked about about identity and culture, and like what kind of a mix of culture are you going to give?
I'm doing everything I can to speak Korean to her. My mm-hmm. Korean isn't that good, mm-hmm. so but I definitely want her to experience Korean culture. For her first birthday, we put her into it's called a hanbok. It's like a Korean. It looks like an old kung fu movie thing that it looks like it's straight out of a Tarantino film kind of. But we've been doing stuff like that. My mom comes over, so I've been giving her as much Korean culture as I can, but it's not that much. I would love for her to be bilingual. I would love for her to decide who she is and, how much Korean and American that she wants to, I want her to create the recipe of the blend, right? But I think that with kids, especially that young, and I don't know what the world's going to be like when she grows up, but when I was growing up, the mixed, and I don't know if that's a proper term, but the mixed kids, they were always the coolest. They were always the most attractive, the half white, half Asian, or the half white, half black, the half white, half Hispanic. They were, I'm sure not all of them, but I remember they were the popular kids. They were the exotic and the attractive. And I don't know, what it's like now in the schools, but I would assume that's still there, you know?
It is, but there's also questions that are asked of my son, and he's not necessarily able to answer all of them and to sort of combat stereotypes, because he really doesn't know what's a stereotype and what isn't, right? So those are the kind of things that I want him to be more culturally aware. And our family, both Scott and my family, don't live in Toronto, right? Yeah. So if we want to infuse some culture, we have to be the instigators of all of that. And I'm awful at speaking Punjabi to my children. But it is definitely something that we have been thinking about and talking about and trying to infuse into our day-to-day activities so that it's normal, and it's not forced.
Yeah. Right. What are you guys doing or thinking about doing to inject culture into your son's life?
Well, I have been, we've been married for 12 years, and I still am not fluent in Punjabi, and that's been one of my mm-hmm. goals, because I'm a better teacher, yeah. quite frankly. Mm-hmm. So it's kind of, I put pressure on myself to get this done and then pass it on. At least with our three-year-old at this point, I am teaching her little words here and there, and she's getting used to them. So I think if I can snowball it from there.
Yeah. And we've talked about this before, because I've said to Scott, I want him to play an active role in infusing culture into our son and our daughter's life. And because it becomes a huge responsibility for those that are of a different culture.
Okay, well, let's talk about that. Okay. John, what are your expectations of your partner to help with the culture, help infuse the culture into your child?
As we're talking about this, I was I jumped into a time machine real quick, and I was thinking about me growing up. And what's interesting, and I think many can relate to this, especially if you grew up in the 80s, not so much today, but I came to this country and I wanted to fit in, and so I was embarrassed to be Korean. I was on a Dax Shepard's podcast, and Monica, his co-pilot is Indian, and she was the same way, where she was like a popular cheerleader, and she wanted to be cool and she wanted to fit in. She didn't, and so me, it was like when I was growing up, it was like I was called a Twinkie. I was the yellow on the outside, the white on the inside. And I wasn't embarrassed of that, because in the 80s, Asian people, especially with media, were portrayed as the nerds. You know, they weren't sexy. They weren't the cool kids, you know? And so because of that, I wanted to be white. I wanted to have blonde hair and blue eyes. And I was kind of ashamed of the foods that we ate. I remember a story where, we were eating dinner and, we were eating Korean food, and right in front of the kitchen was the window, by the front door. And, a girl that I had a crush on, she was half Hispanic, half white. She came to my window without me knowing, and she was looking inside and knocking. And I remember I made eye contact with her. I saw that she saw that we were eating kimchi and rice and, you know, seaweed and all these weird foods. And so I remember quickly getting up to like hide, and my dad grabbed me by my Adidas windbreaker and sat me back down. And in that moment, I remember the, embarrassment, like, oh, I got caught. Now she knows that I eat stinky food. Now she knows that I'm Korean. And I think because of, you know, those kind of experiences, I ran away from Korean school or in Korean people and Korean culture. Cause I didn't want it to be that. So because of that, and now as a 48-year-old, I wish that didn't happen. I wish because I've never been to Korea. You know, I wish I, learned how to read and write Korean. I wish I had more of that, but the world was different. And, you know, it wasn't my thing.
And you're right. I think there's a lot of people that can relate to that. I certainly can. And I ran away from my culture as well. And
right.
And it was difficult because my parents did not know how to read or write English or Punjabi. So therefore, it was very difficult for them to be able to pass along, you know, the history, the teachings of the Sikhism and being Punjabi. So all of those definitely drove me towards being as white as I possibly can, you know, and that's one of the reasons why I would rather speak to somebody on the phone, because there's no trace of an accent or anything like that. So they could sort of put me into any little box that they had conjured up for themselves. So I think that you're right. It's very different now. And so one of the reasons why I want to share that responsibility about culture is that I'm not necessarily the best teacher because I don't know about every nuance of the culture, right? And all of the traditions and things like that. And we had talked about, you know, with someone else, who's going to be the keepers of these traditions when our parents pass away and our older siblings pass away, because it's so foreign to us, because we've never really practiced that. So totally understand.
I think as, you know, as our kids grow up, I think we're transparent with them. I think we tell them our story, you know, ultimately they have the choice. But I don't think we hide the fact that when we were growing up in the 80s, there was a lot of racism, and when we were the outsiders and we just wanted to fit in. So we kind of, you know, didn't want to lean into our culture. I mean, it's truth, right? So if I heard that from my mom growing up and I knew why, it would make me more curious about my culture. You know, it wouldn't push me away from it. But I also feel like, today, because you and I, those tracks have been laid and we have been programmed to push away from our, ethnicity and culture, you know, to fit in. But today, because the world is different, and especially with media, there's so many changes happening, that when that comes up for us, because we probably still have that knee jerk to actually, you know where it's coming from, know that it's not truth, and lean into, you know, everything that you want to as far as your culture today. I mean, there's still a chance for us to be, you know, connect back to our culture and ourselves.
Absolutely. And just a few weeks ago, we ordered Indian food, And I was so thrilled that both of the kids just jumped in and they started eating dal and the naan and they were loving it. Mm-hmm. And my son up until then really didn't eat Indian food. So to see him be so happy taking that in and appreciating it made me want to embrace a culture that much more and yeah. make the food for him and everything like that as well. So you're right. The more that we lean into it, the more that we take ownership of what culture means for us as individuals and as families and what we would like to, you know, pass down as our legacy, the better it is. And it always starts with honesty. With yourself yeah. as well as the kids. Yeah.
You know, when I was growing up, I remember kimchi was embarrassing. It was something that you hide. You know, our parents were digging holes in the backyard, bury the kimchi. That's how they made it. I have no idea the science behind that, but it's like there was a lot of that. And I remember being embarrassed of it, the smell of it. There's a lot of garlic. And now today, you know, they sell kimchi at Trader Joe's and Whole Foods and kimchi. And they have, there's like kimchi chips and shit. And it's like, it's very confusing to me because one side of me is happy because, you know, it's commercialized and accepted and it's become mainstream. But then another side of me feels like, oh, they took this from us. You know, Korean barbecues. I don't know about Canada, but they're popular here in LA. And I remember you'd go to K-Town, you'd sit in the Korean barbecue and it was all Korean and maybe a couple, non-Korean people. But if you go there today, it's mostly Caucasian, non-Korean. The Korean people are the one that are serving and it's just sprinkled with Koreans. And so, yeah, it's really interesting.
Just, us white folk have no good food.
Yeah.
That's the thing, John.
Yeah. Absolutely.
I'm a burger connoisseur. So.
Yeah. Oh, there's a kimchi burger too.
That
they put on there. We live actually very close to K-Town in Toronto, so we definitely and going into the grocery stores there and picking up all of the
crazy snacks.
Yeah,
my son loves them. Like they're just out there, man.
Yeah, spicy and everything.
You know. I think for me, when it comes to culture and food, I would be just as happy if my daughter loved naan and curry or Ethiopian food or any kind of cultural food. It doesn't have to just be, you know, that she's eating kimchi.
Yeah.
Like, yeah. I love the idea that it's more of a melting pot and she's interested in different cultures. Yeah. That, to me, is what's important. She doesn't have to necessarily you know, pick Korean and stay there.
Yeah. And that's an excellent point because I think that we put so much pressure on passing down our culture, but it's really the appreciation of culture in every country in the world. You know, if you appreciate their food, their language, all of those sort of nuances, you know that you are raising an individual that is going to be embracing, you know, different cultures rather than running away from it like we did, you know, so.
Yeah. It's like, you know, and there's a narrow-minded in that, mindedness in that where it's like, it's almost like, you know, forcing your child to watch one genre of a movie forever or. Yeah. You know, study one topic.
Yeah.
So I think people who, you know, are very narrow with that and kind of control their children to only stay in their backyard, you know, in their culture, they're not exposing the child to the world and to everything the world has to offer. You know?
See, for our 11-year-old boy, I feel that he is identifying white. For sure. He's identifying white. All his friends are white. It's easy. But then on the other hand, we haven't done enough expression of your culture.
Yeah.
So I
really do love what John's saying because, you know, it has been, we've been talking a lot about, okay, this is my culture and we want to pass it down to him. But I think that he's right. The more we expose him to the world, the more he will make his choice for himself about how he wants to identify himself for himself and how he participates in the world as that.
Would it hurt your feelings if he identified as white as he grows up?
No, not at all. And I know that he's still curious about being South Asian and what that means for him, because he's very close to my family, which is all in BC. So he constantly wants to go and visit and be a part of the culture and the mixed families and the extended family. And so for him, that's what culture means for him, about being South Asian and identifying as South Asian. It's more about family and being able to connect with all of his cousins and his grandmother and everything like that. So it's an interesting journey that we're on with our children and ourselves, but it definitely is some very thought-provoking. And you, my dear, are very thought-provoking. Thank you so much. I know that we had a very finite time with you, so we're very conscious of that.
Thank you. Yeah. You know, this is an important topic, and I think it's important that we just have that conversation, right? And I also love what you guys are doing, because you and I come from the generation of pagers on, you know, and also the internet. So, like, I feel like we're the bridge generation. Like, we're the generation where we're like, dude, I was here when people were racist, but I'm also here now where we're seeing, you know, like last year, Parasite, a Korean movie, you know, won an Oscar, which is mind blowing. And, there are just things slowly happening now, where, I'm seeing like, positive change. I'm seeing, you know, especially the millennials, I mean, just open minded and, people dating other, races, culture. And of course, like, if you think about the world, yes, there's still, you know, small boxes and it's frowned upon. I think maybe in the Midwest and other type of, you know, smaller towns, but like in big cities, like, you know, New York, LA, San Francisco, it's become the norm. I mean, it's beautiful. It's accepted. It's becoming, you know, it's not becoming this weird thing if you're holding the hand of a minority.
No. And you're right. Change is among us, and it's a beautiful thing. I'm very hopeful for the future, very hopeful, especially coming from where we have come from, and it wasn't always easy, and it wasn't always, you know, cool to be identified by your culture. So we're really, totally agree with you, and very, very looking forward to the future as opposed to like more of the same. There's lots of changes happening. So,
yeah, absolutely. Well, thank you guys for having me on the show, and
hope you
continue the creative dialogue.
Thanks so much. Right, take care. Bye bye.
Thanks, John. Bye.
Wow. What a cool guy.
He's a cool guy. He drives motorcycles.
I know. You have a bromance going, don't
bromance.
You?
The guy's handsome.
He is very handsome.
Like, you guys.
Absolutely.
Check out The Angry Therapist on Instagram and on his website. Really, really smart guy. The school that he's co-founded to teach coaching is just so great.
Yeah.
So great, yeah.
Well, you know, everything that he was talking about totally resonated with me, and it really did make an impact about, you know, it's funny, it's the specificity that makes it so global. So if we do, you know, expose Tage to all of these different cultures and things like that, I think that that's how he's going to be able to figure out what he wants to.
Yeah, I agree. You know, that makes perfect sense. I mean, he's already kind of, you know, the Korean food and the snacks. You know, it's a small thing, but he's interested in it.
Yeah.
And I think he's going to gravitate in as he gets into older grades, high school. Probably.
I think so, too.
He's going to gravitate towards different mixed kids.
Yeah.
Or just different race kids.
Yep.
Because he is a smart guy. And he's got that other race inside him. He's got two. Yeah.
Well, he's also curious, right?
Yes,
he
is really curious.
He asks questions, and you know, so I do think that the more he the older he gets, the more questions he's going to have for us and others. And I think that that's a wonderful thing. I'm very much looking forward to that. So
as usual, we'd love to hear your feedback. Cole@jenimmigrant.com, Scott@jenimmigrant.com. If you have a comment, a question, a topic idea, fire away.
Yes. I'm Cole Binder.
I'm Scott.
And this is Generation Immigrant.
This podcast has been brought to you by the Sonar Network.